I've got a fever, and the only prescription is hiding behind the music stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and with me is Leanne Bark, who is a home hospice music therapist with Park Nicollet in the Twin Cities, and we'll be talking about gardening and farm-to-table cooking, especially in the summer months. Welcome, Leanne. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Patty.
Yeah, so we met each other essentially through past guest, Ari Isomura. Hey, Ari. And she was your roommate, or how did that work out?
Initially, we were roommates back in college at St. Olaf, and we went our separate ways after graduating in our own education and kind of found each other at a mutual party again. And several years later, we reconnected. She happened to be looking for a new roommate at the time, and I happened to have space in my house and was looking for a roommate. So that was a good fit. And she became my pandemic roommate as she moved in April of 2020. So that was an adjustment. And then when she moved out, of course, we're still in the pandemic. So we joke that she's my pandemic roommate and also longtime friend.
Yeah, of course. And also, I mean, she moved out because she got married, right?
So Yes.
Hey, Richardson.
Shout out.
Fans of the podcast. So of course, then because of that, like I always came over and rehearsed at your place with Ari for either 10th Wave or some other concerts, one of which was actually at your place. Or there was a couple times we had a couple hangouts. I don't know if always it was with music, but I definitely got to know you much better from socializing and having great meals and cooking with all your basil that you have, which we'll talk about later. But
that's right. That's right. And you know what? That concert, that backyard concert during COVID was one of my favorite concerts.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I hope those backyard concerts stick around.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we'd love to play.
Good.
So what is your most insane patient encounter?
Well, working in hospice, you just have so many different personalities and of course so many different diagnoses too, but it's not uncommon since we work with older adults that our patients have some form of dementia. I remember one particular patient, she was residing in a memory care. She had Alzheimer's dementia. Hard of hearing, like a lot of our folks as well, yet had a love of music and had elected music therapy or her family. And I brought my keyboard. I was sitting next to her bed. She was laying in bed. She was awake. She was fidgeting a little bit. I was playing for her. I think I was playing hymns, which is the music that she liked. And in her confusion, she just started to take off her pants.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I was playing What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And here's her pants are coming off. And, you know, I'm playing and I look at her and I say, Betty, can you put your pants back on? And she couldn't hear me with the hard of hearing. And so I start to shout at her, can you put your pants back on?
Right.
And, you know, hoping that there's no one passing outside her door and wondering what's going on, hearing these hymns and then hearing, you know, me screaming, put your pants back on. And sure, she'd say, she'd look at me, sure, sure. And she'd pull them back on. And within minutes, her pants would start to come off again. Betty, please, can you keep your pants on? Because she'd forgotten that this was going on. This happened over and over and over again. So that's just the day in the life of a hospice music therapist.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm assuming at some point she came back to a little bit, kept her pants on.
Keep your pants on. Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, that's definitely something that for you, it's a day in the life. For me, that's like, oh my God, what would I'd probably freeze or something. But you know, like part of your training is probably managing those behavioral.
Expect the unexpected.
Okay. Yeah. So on a completely different note, can you tell me about Gizmo?
Yes. Oh, I'd be happy to. Gizmo is my new pug mix. Actually, we've decided that he's a chug. I don't know if you or your listeners have heard of a chug before. It's a Chihuahua and pug mix.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. He's adorable. He's very extroverted, very needy, kind of like me. So we get along pretty well.
I wouldn't say that.
We walk down the street and people probably think, uh-oh, here comes trouble. The funny thing is, so I adopted him just a few months ago and didn't know how he would do with music because I have a piano. I play some guitar, sing a little bit on the accordion. And I thought, well, hopefully it'll work out okay. And sure enough, the first time I played the guitar, he curled up with his face and his head away from me, totally turned his back to me. So I think that we learned the guitar is not his favorite. With the piano, he will jump right into my lap when I'm sitting at the bench. So that's kind of fun to try and try and balance him on my lap and turn pages and play the keys. Yeah,
that might be actually disturbing, right? Or disruptive.
Oh, yeah. He'll lick my fingers as I'm playing. And it's very distracting, but very cute.
Right. I mean, because, yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want their pet in their lap as they're playing?
Exactly. I know.
Yeah.
I know. Life is hard.
Yeah. What is his adoption story?
So I've always had a soft spot in my heart for pugs. I don't know where that came from. I think it came when I was 12. I used to babysit a family down the street and they had initially had one pug and then had another pug. And okay. I just loved these pugs. They're just so goofy looking that they just made me laugh all the time.
Right.
They snort. They drool. They look like little aliens and I just love them. I probably offered to babysit for the dogs, not maybe the kids.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, grew up with dogs. I always grew up with large dogs, but I just, again, always had that soft spot for pugs. And he came up on Pet Finder as a pug mix. And I decided within seconds to apply. He was just, he just captured my heart.
Couldn't resist.
Instantly. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And right over the border in Wisconsin. And when I picked him up and put him in the back seat, started driving home, he started barking and barking and barking. I panicked and I thought, this was the wrong decision. But he quieted down and he has since been a wonderful little companion. And
he just was a little confused.
Roommate.
That's all. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
I mean, I know Gizmo right now is in your lap, so please give him a little pet for me.
I will. I'll give him a little pet on the head.
Okay. Are you ready for some Spitfire questions?
I am.
Mahler or Bruckner?
Ooh, Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel?
Debussy.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Well, yeah. That was like a dumb question. Yeah.
No.
Appetizer or dessert?
Oh, dessert, absolutely.
Okay. What's your favorite dessert?
Anything chocolate.
Okay.
I have some form of chocolate every single day.
I think you figured out life. Like, that's the way to live life. Yeah.
That's right. I've got my priorities.
Exactly. Sparkling or still water?
Distilled.
Fan favorite question. Alternate universe musical instrument?
Ooh, boy, something off of the accordion. Some kind of a variation of the accordion,
what
I would say.
A variation? Oh.
I don't know. Like some kind of combination. You know what would be kind of neat is a combination. I'm learning the harmonica too. So some kind of a combination.
Maybe
you know, like,
do
they have like,
harmonica.
You know, like they have like a banjo and ukulele combination? Maybe something like an accordion and a harmonica.
Okay. I like where you're going. It's very folky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Pandemic guilty pleasure?
Ooh.
I think I know one. I don't know if it's guilty or not, though.
No, I know. This one isn't, you know, podcasts. I've been binging on podcasts and I love them.
Yeah.
What were you going to guess?
Just Dance.
Just Dance. That's right. Oh, how could I forget Just Dance? Sorry, Aerie. Absolutely, Just Dance. Yes.
But I don't know if that was guilty or not. I mean, that's just called exercise. Like you're actually.
Yeah, there we
doing...
go. I like to think so.
Yeah. Okay, good. Favorite professor shout out?
You know, as funny as it sounds, I'm going to say Dave Hagedorn. He was a percussion professor at St. Olaf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I find myself really coming back to a lot of his quotes from classes. Even though I was never a percussion student, I find that he just had a lot of good information to share that I find myself coming back to at this point in my life. Yeah.
Can you share one
little
speck of wisdom? Yeah.
Yes. He said one time that, you know, our bodies are built, we're rhythmic beings. We walk in rhythm. We walk in rhythm. We breathe in rhythm. Our heart beats in rhythm. And so why wouldn't we be musical beings or have some connection to music? Because our bodies are rhythmic. Fundamentally, we are rhythmic beings. And so there's that connection to music right there. Rhythm is the foundation of music.
Like mind blown.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, now I'm like very self-conscious of how I'm breathing or like when I'm breathing, you know? How many times my eyes blink or...
Yeah, right. Yeah, 90 beats per minute, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully not. That would not
that'd
be healthy.
That'd be like hype. Yeah. Most inspired musical hero of any genre?
Elton John.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Why?
I love the variation. I mean, I think there's a lot of variation in his style. And just the fact that he was able to bridge a lot of those genres very effectively. I mean, the rock and roll, country, gospel, movie, and just do it very effectively. And I appreciate the other creativity that he brings into himself as an artist. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he dresses is
glamorously.
That's a great word for that. Yes. And I just like that whole picture. future as an artist. Appreciate that.
What's your favorite Elton John song?
Ooh, you know what? I would say Yellow Brick Road.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. I could play that over and over and over again.
Is that a request you get a lot?
Not a lot, no.
Oh, okay.
We're not quite into that generation.
Mm-hmm, okay, mm-hmm. Okay. We're still like in the 60s kind of thing?
Even 50s, 40s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're still, gotcha. Yes, kind of big band.
Well, that's
Frank Sinatra. Very nice fun.
Tunes.
Yes, absolutely.
Most inspired performance experience?
Ooh. Well, I mean, the Elton John concert that I went to at the XL several years ago was a phenomenal experience. Again, just having everything, the whole show put together with Elton John himself. I mean, the costumes, the band, the setup, the lights, the whole ambiance. And then you have that energy from the audience that's just palpable and it just pulses through your veins. It's just, I mean, it's alive. And at the same time, I have that experience going to an orchestra concert. I mean, even just the last one, going to the Minnesota Orchestra concert, having not have had that experience through most of the pandemic, again, getting that palpable reaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
The vibration from the musicians and from the instruments just really has an impact and does send that chill up your spine. And it's just, again, just live music is so powerful in that way.
Yeah. Just to tag on a bit, I think that what's so great about being an audience member in giant amphitheaters or orchestra hall is that it's this feeling that everyone is in the room for the same reason, you know, a unified reason. And that's very powerful, right? Because how often do we just walk around and not have that gathered mentality of we are here to really experience this all together?
Yes, no matter your political, religious,
right.
whatever background you are, we're all here because we are a fan and we love this music. I use that in music therapy all the time, Patty.
Yeah.
I will say
music
naturally brings people together. It's a community event. Yeah, there's purposes for music as an individual, and it can do a lot for you as an individual, whether it be emotional expression, emotional support, that connection, that inner connection as an individual. But I mean, music, I think, is created to be shared, and people sing together. They make music together. You know, whether you're in a church singing in the choir, whether you are at a concert, like you had mentioned, whether you're playing in an orchestra or a chamber group or the marching band. I mean, music, again, is a community experience.
Yeah. Oh, gives me such purpose. I get so excited.
I know.
Yeah. All right. Desert island piece of any genre?
Boy, something to keep my energy up. So what would that be?
Well, I guess you kind of gave it away a little bit. You said you could listen to Goodbye Yellow Brick Road forever and ever and ever and ever.
Yes, I could play it. I could listen to it. I could sing it. Sure.
Okay. I mean, that might be cheating. I don't know. Okay.
I was thinking something a little bit more lively, or, you know, maybe a little Sia or Beyonce or something.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Okay.
You know what? Because we have so many genres of music out there, I think it's just great.
It's too difficult.
It's difficult. And it's so great that we can draw from all of these different genres based on our mood, how we feel a given day, our activity for the day, right? I mean, throughout any given day, I go through the whole gamut of classical music. I'll listen to jazz. I'll listen to pop music, both old and new and alternative. And I just never get bored then.
Totally. So why I'm this is a rude question because it's limiting you. I don't know, just kind of kidding.
No. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yes, I know. I think broadly, especially, you know what, music therapy has really helped me to think more broadly and introduced me to all these other genres out there. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm classically trained and classical music is just near and dear to my heart and always will be. But I've really branched out over the years with being introduced to all these different genres through the patients I meet.
Well, and that's, again, as we were just talking about how music connects us, it's also generationally connecting us, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. Well, you finished the Spitfire questions. Congratulations. Now I have to remember how Goodbye Yellow Brick Road goes.
So goodbye Yellow Brick Road, do your dogs like... Yes! Where the dogs of society howl. Now, I would have loved to hear you play that on the triangle.
Oh, well, the problem is the triangle's only one pitched, right?
So. Yeah, right.
It just kind of does that.
There we go. And all of your audience would recognize Yellow Brick Road on the triangle.
Right.
Clearly.
Okay, Leanne, can you walk me through your musical origin story? How were you introduced to music? When did you decide to pursue it professionally? When did you decide to become a music therapist? And where are you today?
Well, as a lot of young girls, I started taking piano lessons when I was 6 and really instantly loved piano. I will actually never forget that first day I met my piano teacher. I can just picture her walking up my sidewalk. We were so excited, my sister and I. We were sitting by the window. We waited for her to come in. Lisa went. In any case, so I grew up playing the piano. It was just always my identity. It was something that just came not easy to me, but just something that I continued to love and enjoy. There was, of course, a time in middle school, like a lot of us, where practicing was not fun and I had the timer and everything, but got through all that and joined the high school band playing clarinet. And again, that came kind of easy to me and really enjoyed the community of the band. It was actually then the St. Olaf band that I was able to see in concert at one time in high school. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in the concert hall. And when I saw the concert, I said to myself, I want to be in that band one day. So yeah, so that is actually why I went to St. Olaf, was to be in the band.
You know, can I just pause one second? I'm sorry in your story, but I think that's so amazing because for us jaded musicians that do school shows, I think we all deep down enjoy spreading music to everybody and know the purpose behind it, but the jadedness gets in the way of like, oh, another school show. It's not, you know, you slug your instrument here and there, but it's like your result of that band showing up because the little things that you do every day. You don't know what actually is going to influence someone down the road.
Yes, you never know what your impact might be.
Yeah.
You never know what that might be. And I see that even in my work setting today as a music therapist in a very different way. But yes, you never know. And the ironic thing about all of this is that I ended up then starting at St. Olaf. I don't think I've played my clarinet since St. Olaf. I don't actually love playing the clarinet. Uh-huh. I love playing the piano, but clarinet is just very challenging. I just always remember being frustrated with my reeds, you know? It's easy to blame the reed. You never have a good reed. If I could start over, I don't know that I'd pick a reed instrument. That's just tough. But I loved the band. Again, I went to the school for the band and that was my favorite experience at St. Olaf, was being in the band. And when I started as a freshman, I actually did not want to major in music at all.
Oh, okay.
Because I loved it so much, I was afraid of burning out.
I can never imagine
my life until the day I die. I always want to have music as a part of my life. And so burnout was a big fear of mine. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I'll just keep it a passion and something I'll do my whole life, but it won't be a career. And I ended up taking a few music classes though, regardless, because I obviously love music and I loved my music classes so much. I just kept taking more and more. And then one summer, it was actually the summer of 2008, the job crash, and I didn't get a summer job. So again, the universe will work in its magical ways to make things work out. And that summer, I ended up job shadowing a physical therapist and a music therapist.
Oh, okay.
Because I was contemplating at that point both of those different options for career choices, thinking more I would pursue physical therapy.
So you wanted to, in general, you felt like you could therapize people. That's
there
not
we
a
go.
Word, but you help, know what I
help
mean?
People, help people.
Yeah,
I knew.
There you go.
I like therapize though. That should be in the dictionary. I knew I wanted to be in a helping profession. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And
do you know where that came from?
Yeah. You know,
did it come from music or did it, yeah.
Physical therapy?
No, just this idea of wanting to help people. Yeah.
I mean,
it's also your personality. But.
I think so. I think it's maybe more a personality thing. And I had done a lot of volunteering at like a nursing home when I was in high school and volunteering in the community with people. Yes. I very much like to be helping people and have
I respect that.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing at this point, so I was about a sophomore in college. The first day that I job shadowed the physical therapist, I mean, the first day, I almost passed out because I was really, I observed a procedure and it didn't go well. And it just grossed me out. So that ended with me outside of the patient's room with my head between my knees, trying to get the blood back into my head.
Oh,
and then the patient came out and said, "Are you okay, honey?" And that's when I realized I can't do physical therapy. Nope.
Right.
Nope. Yeah. That's not for me. The first day I job shadowed a music therapist in Northfield, Jennifer Pelletier, I came home on fire. I felt electrified. I felt alive. And that was a turning point. That's when I knew that's what I needed to do. It only took one day.
Can I dive into what specifically that was? I mean, was it, was it fusing those two ideas of you being a helper and music and your love of music kind of combining forces?
Yeah. What ended up happening, so this music therapist, Jennifer Pelletier, she worked at a school for adults with intellectual disabilities. And the day that I went to shadow her, she was directing a choir of folks, again, with various intellectual disabilities. And these folks were just, again, it was this going back to that community that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. how music brings people together for a common love of music. And mm-hmm. again, you could see that community, you could feel that community with this choir. And everyone was so supportive of each other. They came up and gave me hugs at the end of the rehearsal. You know, they would clap when someone had a solo and just so encouraging. And so many smiles. It was just, again, the way that these people were able to connect through music and the respect that they had for the music therapist. And really what it is, so what this music therapist was accomplishing and what music therapy does is it uses music. Music is the tool, but it's addressing non-musical goals.
Right.
And so, you know, again, that community building, helping these individuals with their social skills, their inner communication, the relationship building, the emotional support. Again, they were all just in a great place, smiling and encouraging, even a cognitive stimulation, right? Through learning this music, reading the music, mm-hmm. memorizing music. There's just a lot of skills that you're able to tap into using music.
Yeah, that's special. It's like things that like we take for granted, or as in I think musicians, like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? There's research out there now too, that by learning an instrument at a young, you know, in your schooling, learning an instrument, playing in a group, whether it be a choir, an orchestra, or a band, you're building your social skills. And you know, not only that, but the connections that you're building, that your brain is making, also consequently will help you in your academics. And again, you think about the physical motor piece of playing an instrument. I mean, it really is all encompassing learning to play an instrument and playing in a group at a young age. So there are lots of benefits even outside of music that you're achieving at a young age in that setting.
Yeah. Okay. So I know I interrupted your lineage of you becoming a music therapist. So please continue.
Oh yeah. No, that was a turning point, job shadowing Jennifer. And so then that next fall, going back, you know, to St. Olaf, I enrolled in all of the music classes to finish with a Bachelor of Arts degree in music, and learned that along that way that you actually need to have a music therapy degree from an accredited school. And St. Olaf is not a music therapy accredited school. This is something that our American Music Therapy Association approves of certain programs to teach music therapy. So after graduating St. Olaf, then I enrolled at University of Kansas mm-hmm. for a master's and equivalency in music therapy.
Okay.
And that's where I got my music therapy degree.
So you didn't have to redo an undergrad? That's good. Okay.
Yes. All those music classes transferred.
Oh, transferred. Great.
Yeah. So music therapy is obviously it's the same music courses that you would have for music education or music performance. You know, you have the history, the theory, the ear training, the conducting even, and ensemble work, all of that. And then you also have a lot of psychology classes, abnormal psychology, developmental psychology. You know, I even took a counseling class. We do behavior classes. I did a behavior management class. We even do upper level statistics and human anatomy and physiology. Yeah. Wow. All of that because music therapy is very broad reaching. We, you know, at the end of our training are qualified to work really across all the different settings, whether it be children, adolescents, adults, older adults, be folks with disabilities,
all walks
over.
Of life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, so after you graduate with your degree in music therapy, whether that be bachelor's, master's, or a doctorate, you can go for any of those degrees. Then first you take an internship, and the internship requirements are 1,040 hours, which is the equivalent of 6 months full-time work. And you do your internship at any American Music Therapy Association accredited location. And so I did my internship at Park Nicollet, actually.
Oh, okay.
And after completing the internship, was eligible to sit for the board certification exam. Mm-hmm. And all music therapists need need to take the board certification exam to become a music therapist. And then after passing that exam, then you are board certified and can practice. And I feel like I got lucky with a lot of it because when I passed my board exams, it was just a matter of months when Park Nicolet had a position open in hospice. Mm-hmm. And that was the one setting. Now that was kind of an interesting discovery for me too, because I had never had any experience in hospice personally or professionally or in school prior to my internship at Park Nicolet. But that was the one setting that I really developed a love for almost instantaneously. So I knew that that's what I wanted to start with. So I've been at Park Nicolet working full-time in home hospice now for 8.5 years.
Wow. Cool. Congratulations, first
Thank
of
you.
All. I know I said this publicly once, and I'll say it again. I just highly respect the work you do. Not all of us have the bandwidth or, you know, the compassion to do this really important work. And I put you on such a pedestal.
Aww, well, thank you. You know, and I say this and it's true in so many ways, but the people that I get to work and interact with every day really serve as the fuel mm-hmm. for what I do. It starts with their patients and then mm-hmm. that's what keeps me going.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I have necessarily the right questions to ask, but my overall want is to learn more about not necessarily the day-to-day life of being a music therapist, but some of the more deeper touching experiences that you might have had, or just revelations or other things that someone in a position like myself who's not, I mean, I've done some music therapy in a hospital. When I was in high school, I would go around and play music at a hospital, but you do it on a day-to-day basis just to get a window into what work is like.
Yeah. Well, to even go back to the first story, right, that I told, there is a lot of joy, and it may seem ironic, but I see a lot of joy every day, I would say, mm-hmm. and gratitude mm-hmm. in my day-to-day work with hospice patients. And of course, there's going to be the sadness. There'll be some regrets expressed at times too. Oh, wow. But, you know, music really brings the best out of people and can bring so much meaning and focus on what is important in mm-hmm. a person's life. And, you know, I just hear these incredible stories from folks because music just can elicit that. It can open up these stories. First of all, the music, and there are studies actually with this too, that music, because it can elicit so much emotion and it creates a safe space so much of the time, that is, I think, initially what opens the door when I come in and meet people for the first time. It's usually not too difficult to establish a, you know, good working therapeutic relationship because, again, the music creates a safe space for them. Music that is preferred by that patient that you're visiting, whether it be waltzes and polkas or hymns or classical or country or whatever. You know, you create that safe space. They feel comfortable and really sharing things with you, reflecting back on their life. You know, I heard so many beautiful stories, even just, you know, today a woman was telling me about, you know, started with her grandson who played jazz piano, and then that turned into how much she loved raising her kids. She had 5 kids and that was some of the best part of her life. And I asked why, and she said, because they brought fun into my life. She said, and what's so important to me is that I keep on smiling and just look at the good aspects of life. You know, she's just a very positive outlook kind of a person. And, you know, we ended up singing, you know, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you and ain't we got fun. And we sang Singing in the Rain. I mean, just all of these songs that reflected her values and what was important to her. So you have those kind of experiences where, again, you're hearing these stories of love and gratitude and these experiences like traveling. And, you know, people don't talk about so much their jobs or their vocation is not usually what's most important. They talk about the experiences they've had, the relationships that they've had. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been married for 60 some years and they met their spouse at a dance or, you know, that kind of thing.
Very sweet.
Very, very much so. But we also, you know, I have experiences with folks, very meaningful experiences with folks who are nonverbal too. And again, you bring in this music and can create this comfort for this patient, you know, who you learn what their music experience or their music preferences are, and you can create that safe space and you can see their reaction through their eye contact. You know, I mean, I saw a woman yesterday, again, nonverbal, and I mean, she hardly took her eyes off me. Mm-hmm. We were singing hymns and mm-hmm. she used to play the piano. She used to sing these hymns mm-hmm. and her husband would pick these hymns that he knew was significant to her. And actually he said the last words that she spoke ever was singing Jesus Loves Me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, we sing that a lot. That was the last words that left her mouth was the song, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and again, she doesn't say a word through her whole session, but she just just, her eyes are just, you know, piercing right at you. And you can just see mm-hmm. that connection that way. So
yeah,
so many ways to connect with people through music.
I'm getting all the chills.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it, you know, music is just so powerful. It's a yeah. very powerful tool. And we're just very fortunate to have it in our tool belt, you know,
yeah.
and that we get to use it.
Or that even if we, you know, conceptually know it or, you know, day to day have it in the background or whatever, it's taking a second to really appreciate that power that we're talking about. I feel like that's what a lot of your patients experience, because they are fully committed to that moment with
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just want to emphasize too, if I can, that so music therapy is, like I said, using music really to address these non-musical goals.
Right.
Right. And so in hospice, you see a lot of symptom management are goal uh-huh. areas like pain, anxiety, depression, and which music can be very effective for some of those uh-huh. areas. Right. Like right now I'm focusing on some dyspnea work or folks who experience shortness of breath. You know, how can you use music to work on that breath support control right. and those right. breathing techniques, maybe through singing or playing an instrument, even playing a harmonica, you know? And spiritual support is another big piece in hospice, right? Folks are thinking about the next phase, the next step.
Yeah.
And a lot of this generation that we're serving right now are religious and have a belief in heaven and a God. And these hymns are comforting for them because it has those messages that they'll be okay and that yeah. they're taken care of and
right.
they're loved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The family support. Wow. Lots of family support. And I mean, I see family members light up just with smiles and joy. I see them tearful, you know, and I have some family members after a music therapy session will come out, you know, follow me out the door and say things to me like, you know, I haven't seen my husband speak so much in 4 weeks, you know, since you were here. Mm-hmm. And the music just stimulated his speech. Or, you know, a spouse yeah. will say, you know, I haven't seen him that alert in weeks or smile yeah. this much yeah. in weeks or months, or, you know, and so again, you know, you just, the music can really bring out so much for a person.
Yeah. I mean, thank you again for being that vessel for people in not just the direct patient, but also, as you say, even the family members. And yeah, I just very much respect and appreciate everything that you do. And I just, I was going to say, I hope like more people become music therapists from this, you know, but
you know,
I don't know.
If- yeah. And what's kind of another, maybe, I don't know if this is going full circle or what you want to call it, but it's like, for me, going to a live performance, especially, I mean, orchestra concerts, chamber ensembles, when I go to those concerts myself, that's what fills my cup and allows mm-hmm. me to have this ongoing passion for music and to be able to give in the way that I'm able to give, right? In, mm-hmm. in a hospice setting with yeah. music therapy. And so there's just so many different roles that music has in the world. And I think that they're all very valuable in their own ways.
Yeah. Well, is this a good time to take a break?
I don't know. No, that's
okay.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. So you were telling me that gardening and this farm-to-table cooking kind of emerged from an experience or one of your first jobs on a farm.
Yeah, I know. As funny as that sounds, I was trying to think, is there any connection to mm-hmm. working on a farm and music? Because these seem to be, I mean, outside
the
of
happy
music
farmer.
Therapy. Yeah, there we go.
I'm just kidding.
Happy farmer.
Robert Schumann.
See, I knew there was a connection. Yes. See, thank you, Schumann. Yeah, because outside of music therapy, my happy place is in the garden. And in high school. So my favorite job outside of music therapy was working at this berry farm, a pick your own berry farm. And you know, there again, I was working with people, working at the farmers markets, the mm-hmm. you pick. But I also just love the aspect of being on my hands and knees, you know, between the rows of strawberries and, you know, having your fingers in the dirt and the plants and coming home just, you know, sweaty and your knees are all dirty. And I love everything about that.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I've been to your backyard, not just for the concerts, but also to pick some of your basil. And you have a green thumb, like you know what you're doing. So did you learn all this skill from working on the farm, or were there other little tips and tricks along the way?
I think it was mostly from the farm. I guess, you know, my mom did a little bit of gardening, but it was mostly, I think, from the farm and just seeing, yes, how you can grow your own food and how it tastes so much better.
Better, yeah.
Than anything you can buy. And in many cases, it's so much more cost effective too. So that was just something that, oh, and going to the farmer's markets, working at the farmer's markets was just one of my favorite parts of the job. Mm-hmm. And I just was exposed to so many different kinds of vegetables and fruits. And by talking to the other vendors, you know, you pick up little tips and tricks or things about different produce and growing and harvesting and all of that stuff. And just being surrounded by that all the time. I mean, I worked at the farm for 7 years.
Wow.
And yeah, I continued to go back every summer, you know.
Didn't you have like, I remember Ari once came back with a ton of strawberries.
Yes. So I'll go back just to pick as a customer.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yes. I will go back as a customer, and I'm a very loyal customer now, and we'll pick strawberries, raspberries.
They were delicious.
Yeah. Yes, yes. You see, the difference between homegrown, it turns you into a snob because... I think I'm a berry snob now because I will not eat a Driscoll's berry anymore or...
Yeah.
It just doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
You know, and so when I was able then to have, you know, some space here, a little yard, and grow my own vegetables, it's such a great feeling to be able to, you know, sustain yourself, to be able to plant your own food, your own vegetables. I haven't dabbled in fruit, but vegetables. And then when I'm making lunch, you know, in the summertime, it's like, you know, oh, what do I have ripe in the garden?
Yeah.
What can I do with this? You know, it actually, oh, here's a connection to music, right? Mm-hmm. It sparks so much creativity. Because you have all these vegetables and then based on whatever's ripe or ready to be picked, it's okay, how can I use this? Finding a recipe around it or just working from scratch. And that's just such a great feeling of satisfaction when you can put something together from scratch and create something that's healthy and that just tastes, has so much flavor because it's homegrown.
Totally.
Just makes a difference.
I know. It is really shocking. I mean, when I've been able to grow my own, or you know, someone gave me a squash or something and it's just so much better or just there's so much more. I don't know what it is about it. I mean, maybe just artisanal, the compost you put in the soil or just like being really careful about managing your plants versus, I guess, a huge farm that uses pesticides and things like that. Or I don't know.
Part of it, I think, is just that it's in season and it's local. You know,
sure, that too. Yeah.
I mean, taking strawberries, for example, I mean, I know we all have a craving for them in the middle of winter, of course, right? And so they need to be shipped from warmer climates from so far away. And so you have to pick them before they're actually ripe and ready to eat because they'll ripen a little bit. Or they'll rot if they're too ripe during that shipment time.
Right.
And so when you buy them in the store, they're not actually ripe and they won't get ripe. And so they're crunchy. Again, talking about a strawberry. Strawberries are supposed to be...
like melt in your mouth.
Melt in your mouth. Yeah. Yes, that's an excellent description.
Yeah.
And that's what homegrown strawberries taste like. And they're not supposed to be white on the inside. It's supposed to be red all the way
through. Yeah, yeah, totally.
But again, when you pick them in a warmer climate and ship them, it's not the same.
Yeah, man, it is like such a bummer that I feel so many people grow up thinking, myself included, for a very long time. Like when I was in San Francisco, I had a little planter and I planted strawberry seeds and I grew one, like the tiniest little strawberry, probably the size of a fingernail or something like that. And I was like, okay, I'm going to eat it because I don't think it's going to, I don't know what else to do with it. And it just was jam packed with flavor. And I was like, what? Like, what is this?
Yes. Yes, those little ones too sometimes have the biggest flavor, but because they're grown in the right environment at the right time, that's when they should be eaten. That's when they're at their prime.
Oh, now you're making me want to eat strawberries.
Oh, me too. Me too, Patty. I'm dreaming. June.
It's going to come soon.
Yes. We'll keep dreaming.
Well, and I'll go berry picking with you for sure.
Yes, there we go. Okay, that'll be our outing.
Yeah, sounds good. But in the meantime, we'll have to deal with frozen strawberries or half-ripened strawberries.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Just add a little more sugar and chocolate.
Maybe
that'll make up for it.
What's your favorite item to grow in your garden?
Great question. You know, I would say peas, sugar snap peas.
Ooh, fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a little more challenging to grow because they're a vine. And so you need to put the posts and some kind of a fence or something that they can climb up.
Yeah.
But boy, that's probably the one thing out of the garden that I can can just pick and eat raw, just right off of the stem. Yeah.
Are there any pests that you have to worry about?
You know, there are. I have yet to see them. With my kale leaves. So they're sneaky. They are. When I harvest when I go up for kale, you'll see there's something chewing on them. They're little holes or something. There's something chewing on them. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I have yet to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
So, yes, there are.
So they can just keep nothing away.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and also I feel like that's a little bit part of it, too, that we've missed from mass, produce and in grocery stores, is that plants are supposed to have a little bit of things eaten through them. That's natural. Yeah.
And or when you have to wash your produce, well, you should be washing it. But, you know, there's a little bit of dirt in it. I mean, that's because it's real.
Right.
That's where they come from.
Right. Totally. Yeah. 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 So composting is what you do with all the scraps. And so do you just have your own compost bin outside, or do you... Oh, okay. Or I was wondering if you do vermicompost at all, or...
So I started by doing it, and this was a couple of years ago. I started by just composting my backyard. And I will have to say, for your listeners who have not tried composting, it is actually a lot easier than I would have anticipated.
Okay.
And it's not as messy or smelly as you think it might be. I just started with putting a little can with a lid in my pantry right next to my garbage can. Mm-hmm. And then I only put vegetable or fruit scraps in there.
Okay. So no eggshells?
Eggshells I will. Eggshells I will put in there. Coffee grounds or any kind of fruit and vegetable peels or stalks or stems. But that's it. No meat, no bones, things like that. And then I just empty it every few days, actually. Mm-hmm. And again, if it has a lid, it won't smell.
Sure.
I empty it into I just took a big Rubbermaid canister, and my dad helped me drill some holes in it around the perimeter. And then I just have a tightly fitting lid, and I bought a round one so that every several days, then I just tip it on its side. I secure the lid, I tip it on its side, and then I roll it, because you need to mix it every few days and water it actually every few days too. Keep it moist so that the compost can break down. And I was amazed, again, it took 30 seconds, to just drop it on the side and kick it around a little bit and put some water in it and a handful of leaves every once in a while, because you need to balance the browns and the greens.
Yeah, right.
And I was surprised at how quickly that broke down over the summer.
Yeah.
And last year was the first time I was able to use it in my garden. So I was able to reap the benefits of this nutritious compost now for my vegetable garden for this year. So
does it just look like dirt at the end? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It is just black. Actually, funny story about that too. So most of it was just black dirt, except I did find half of a bagel.
Oh.
That was the only thing that didn't break down when I dumped it into my garden last fall. There was just a half of a bagel. Of all things.
I know. Well, what's in the bagel?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Should I be concerned? What's in the bagels that don't break down?
Right. Or someone just thought it was trash and chucked it in there. I don't know.
I thought, it could be. Or a squirrel maybe left it there.
A squirrel?
We'll just say that.
Right. Did you notice any flavor difference when you started last summer when you used your compost?
I have not yet. And I think, and I don't think maybe I had enough, because I only had one. And, it broke down the compost to about a half of the canister. So it really wasn't a whole lot. It's just more a top soil than at that point.
Yeah, okay.
Or
okay.
top layer.
Well,
but I am hopeful because I have a full bin out there now. From the winter. Yeah. So now that will start breaking down when the temperatures get warmer, then I'll get to add another layer. So I'm guessing that I'll start to see some differences in the next year or two.
Yeah. Have you been kicking around that canister all winter?
No.
Okay. I was like, that's commitment.
No. The canister froze.
Water it anyway. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
I think it just froze to the ground. So
So not much happens during the winter, right?
In the winter it all just stays stagnant. It just all freezes. And so the composting part does not happen until it gets warmer. In larger composting centers or in the right conditions, if you have a different kind of a canister, you can sometimes allow it to compost over the winter. Okay. But I just don't have that kind of equipment and space and stuff.
Right,
it just just is on a pause until the spring.
Okay, so now the farm to table cooking. So you already started to mention like the creativity that sparks your excitement to cook. But I also wanted to tap into the psychology a bit behind that, which I think you did a little bit. But is there any other sort of connections that you have, or just like personal or metaphorical in any way?
You know, because gardening and then consequently harvesting what you have and putting it to use, putting it on your table, cooking or sharing it with others, a lot of it is very methodical and systematic. And maybe that's what draws me to a part or a piece of the gardening and then the subsequent cooking with it. I'm thinking ahead of time, I'm planning, okay, what do I want to plant? And then organizing, you know, figuring out, you know, what's going to fit in the garden and then what is going to grow in the zone that we're in. And then figuring out, you know, the germination time, when do I put the seeds into the ground and, you know, how much water and what other kind of nutrients. And I was even reading about the different pH levels. I mean, it's very systematic and organized. And you can also approach gardening too, of course, by just throwing seeds in the ground or plants in the garden.
Seeing what pops up.
Seeing what pops up. And there's no right or wrong way to go about it. I mean, you can really be playful with it too. Mm-hmm. Improvise.
Mm-hmm. Sure, right.
You know? And then just having that satisfaction of, you know, seeing it come up. Just seeing that those first little buds and then continuing to care for it and tend to it. It's very systematic. You know, you figure out when you need to water it and based on, you know, the weather and everything. I'm very much a morning person and I love my favorite time of the day in the summers are to wake up very early. And then I take about a half an hour and I just walk around my house and water the vegetables. I water the flowers and listen to my podcasts and or music. And it's just my happy place. Yeah. And it is almost meditative in that way. The sun is coming up and the birds and everything. And it's just a great way to connect in nature, I guess, so to speak. And then that piece too of, again, it's just such a fulfilling feeling just to be able to grow your own food. And then you really do feel better.
Yeah.
I think physically, really, when you're eating produce that is that fresh and without all the pesticides and all that other stuff, you really do feel better. And that is just so rewarding in and of itself too. I love too being able to send home a fresh tomato or a handful of basil with a friend or
I'll always be up for taking anything that you don't want.
Yes. How did you end up? So I want to know too, how did you end up using the basil or how do you like to use the basil?
I think
basil?
We just made pesto.
Did we make pesto? Remember? Okay.
I think so. Yeah. But I mean, let me know. I'm happy to be, I can pay.
No, it's such a treat and such a great thing to share.
Yeah, totally. And of course, like I'm joking / but not, but also saying like I very much appreciate that on the reciprocal side, of course. Are there any final thoughts that you wanted to share with us about the cycle of from beginning to end of gardening, cooking and consuming and composting?
You know, I love kind of like I love discovering new music and new genres. It's kind of the same with recipes. And maybe that's a similar theme. It's just, I love having new experiences and looking for new recipes, trying new flavors, being open to something new is something I value too. And I just get so excited when you can put all of these different ingredients, this fresh produce together and just come up with, and people, I mean, are so creative just in how they put together recipes and these different flavors. And then again, going based on what's in season. Starting there because that's the best produce, right? What's in season? Yeah. Those will have the best flavors. And by talking to people, your neighbors and folks at the farmers market and everything, you can just get all of these great ideas. And there's so much out there in terms of the palate and different flavors and cuisines. I don't know that you could experience it all in one lifetime.
Yeah. Oh, man. But that's the goal, right?
Like, yes.
That's what we're trying to do.
That's right. That's right.
I realized I actually do have one final question from my end. What can we expect in your garden this coming summer?
Good question. The sugar snap peas
sure
are a given.
They're returning.
And the basil. Uh-huh. Yes. Uh-huh. And, you know, tomatoes are actually something that I didn't think I would enjoy as much as I did. And yeah, so what I learned, again, from talking to my neighbor is that you can roast tomatoes and put in fresh basil and anything, you know, other chives maybe or parsley or whatnot, some pepper, a little bit of olive oil and salt. You roast them. Yep. And you can freeze them.
Oh.
So just tonight, I had a bowl of soup that I made from a frozen package of roasted tomatoes. Yes, you better believe it.
My mouth is gaping. I'm like, what?
Yes. Last week, I made a chili with these tomatoes. It is a game changer. So you can, and again, you can be so creative with your produce. I've frozen, we talked about pesto. I've frozen my pesto into little tablespoon servings. Oh. And just last week, I made some turkey wraps, right?
Oh, good.
With pesto. Yeah. So again, like you can use this stuff. This morning, I had a smoothie using the strawberries that we picked at the farm last summer and froze, still packed with flavor. And so every day I'm still eating
things
this produce, the things from that I froze from last summer. So that's also just a great treat that you can enjoy all winter long too.
Yeah, I feel like I'd have to have like five freezers or something.
Yes, I have a large chest freezer. That is something that you need to invest in. But worth it.
No kidding. Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your love of gardening and making me salivate over all the flavors and the food farm to table and composting. And
anytime.
May I ask you two final questions?
Yes.
What is one piece of advice you would tell your younger self about entering and pursuing a music career?
I guess not to worry about burnout before it actually happens. Hmm. If I had known or had listened to the passion, right? If I really paid attention to the passion I had for music and trusted that, right? I think a big trust piece is a part of that. And to go with your gut, if I had just not worried about burnout because that wasn't an issue for me and just continued to pursue what I loved because I loved it and trust that that would work out, then that would have been great.
Yeah. Sage advice for sure. And as we enter a post-pandemic world, hopefully, what elements of your musical pandemic life would you want to continue and what would you want to shed? I realize in asking this question, though, I didn't ask you about what pandemic life was like for you. I mean, I know you're separated from your patients. So I don't know if you need to preface any of the answer with just describing a bit of what your job was like during the pandemic.
That's a good idea. So during the pandemic, initially, we were not able to see our patients face to face and we had to rely on telehealth.
Yikes.
And it didn't work as well with the music component, right? Because normally we're in a room with our patients providing live music. And that's just hard to transmit because of the lag and the sound quality is just not there over telehealth. But we did what we could and we did use music still across the telehealth and that worked in some capacity. Eventually, we were able to go to see our patients in person again, just using the precautions of wearing a face mask and eye protection, whether that's goggles or a face shield. To this day, we still need to wear a mask and eye protection with every patient that we encounter. If they have COVID, we also need to wear gown and gloves. And I've had a couple of those experiences and played the keyboard and sang through the mask and with the gloves. And, you know, you make it work. You know, I have just really, through the pandemic, appreciated even more those face-to-face interactions because when we didn't have them, those were a long few months.
Yeah.
And to not be able to connect with our folks in person was challenging in so many ways, especially with an older adult population. And then we would need to rely on someone on the other end, especially if it was a nursing home, to be able to facilitate that and have a device on the other end. So, you know, it would be maybe half a dozen phone calls I'd have to make to set up one telehealth visit.
Wow.
And so it was a lot of work. And even then it was hard to connect with most folks. So I really learned to appreciate, and we did window visits, which was great in the summertime and challenging too in many ways. We literally would slosh through the mud sometimes in our wellies, you know, carrying our guitar and keyboard to get to the back of the building and then sit in the sun, in the heat of the sun, when, you know, playing and sweating away. But, you know, you did what you had to do. And you know what, though? All of that was worth it in the end. You know, again, when you see the impact impact that you would make on our folks, even when we're sitting on their patio, you know, they're looking at us through the window, that was enough to make it well worth it. And
yeah.
I do not take our in-person interactions right now for granted anymore. I mean, you know, we see even the littlest response, sometimes all we get from our patients in terms of a response is just a raise of the eyebrow. It might just be a whisper. Mm-hmm. It might be how they just look at you differently or mm-hmm. how they shift their body. And you can't always catch that over a screen. And it just really goes to show how powerful live music is. Whether it's myself, whether it's a symphony in an orchestra at Orchestra Hall, or whether it's me sitting with my keyboard at bedside to someone. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's something about your presence and the music being created in that space, just the way that the vibrations are in that space that have that impact on our bodies and consequently on our minds and our hearts and our emotions that you just can't simulate or emulate in other ways.
Yeah, I know. It's like all heavy, but it's also, you know, yeah, it's so true. I mean, all the things you're saying, and I'm grateful that you're able to go back. I know it's still a little bit limited with the mask and things, but I mean, we have to still be cautious and careful and safe, especially with the older populations at risk. But yeah, I mean, let's hope that we never have to experience another pandemic again, right? Mm-hmm. I think everyone can like agree on that.
Yes. And you know what? And since you mentioned that, a couple of our patients, not very many, but a couple of our patients would have lived through two pandemics, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I have a patient right now. Get this, Patty. She was born in 1918.
Uh-huh. So that's 103. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, 103. And she still walks by herself.
That's incredible. I know. Good for her. Keep it going. Right. Keep chugging along.
And most importantly, she likes the Beatles.
Oh, well, there you go.
And the symphony. So she likes the diversity.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Are there any platforms or websites for listeners to learn more about you or any upcoming, well, there's projects, but you know, places where you might practice or I don't know, just to say hi.
Well, you're always welcome to connect with me at my email, Leanne Bark, LeanneBarck at gmail.com. But I'm always happy to share my passion for music therapy with others, talk about it as a career, you know, talk about the education piece of it, everything in between. Right now I have a couple of interns that are working under me.
Oh, cool.
And that has just been a great joy to be in that teaching and supervising role as well. Yeah, and
pass along.
Every once in a while we'll have high school students or college students, you know, reach out with questions and want to learn more about the field. And I'm more than happy to have those discussions too.
Yeah. Oh, you're so wonderful, Leanne.
I love it. You're right though. I think we need more music therapists and there's so much need in our world, especially now, I think post-pandemic with so much trauma and emotional needs just across the spectrum, you know, young and old. It's really important to take care of yourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your reviews will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make sushi's day, and it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become part of the Hidden Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/HidenMusicStand. Our social media handle for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is at Hidden Music Stand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, HidenMusicStand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize a piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. The link is in the description of each episode. Leanne, thank you so much for joining me today on the show. As I said just a second ago, you're such a wonderful human. I can't wait to pick strawberries with you and to do all the cooking. You know, let me know if you need any help in your garden. And thanks for listening.
Say bye, Sushi.